Welcome to the American Cafe. I'm Ira Melman. Today in the cafe, Elizabeth Lee brings us the story of some help for the many women on Skid Row in Los Angeles.
It's a place that where everybody is dumped, you know. And if you don't ask for help, you're not going to get help.
June So and Amy Katz have word of an attempt to show girls that they can be girly and show interest in science at the same time by the clothes they wear.
She can love girly things and also love science. It tells science is just as much for girls as it is for boys.
The far right of American politics has its first major declared presidential candidate.
I believe in the power of millions of courageous conservatives rising up to reignite the promise of America.
VOA national correspondent Jim Malone joins us with the story of Ted Cruz. All of that and more on this week's American Cafe. An area called Skid Row in downtown Los Angeles, California, has one of the largest concentrations of homeless people in the United States. It's also where many social services can be found. One such organization is focused on homeless women, trying to get them off the streets in creative ways. Elizabeth Lee reports from Los Angeles.
Skid Row is like no other place in Los Angeles. The homeless congregate on the sidewalks for blocks all times of day.
It's a place that where everybody is dumped, you know. And if you don't ask for help, you're not going to get help.
Yolanda Waters' life now as a barista is nothing like what it was just a couple of years ago. She was homeless and ended up on Skid Row.
For people to looking at you like you're nothing, treating you like you ain't worth nothing, that's the hard part.
In the middle of Skid Row, Waters found a place that taught her she is worth something. The Downtown Women's Center, among many of its services, gives homeless women job skills and helps them find work. To prepare for the real world, homeless women receive job training at the center's boutique and cafe and through craft-making workshops. The women learn to create different items, from candles and greeting cards to ornaments. The center's Joe Altapeter says the program teaches them to arrive on time, complete a project, and work in a group.
Rebuilding self-esteem, developing relationships with individuals, you know, chronic homelessness when you're living on the streets, you become isolated. So this is an opportunity to really deal with those issues.
He says women make up a quarter of the 58,000 homeless people in Los Angeles. The high cost of housing is one factor. Women who already live on the edge of poverty are more at risk of being homeless. Many who end up on the streets struggle with mental illness and past trauma, such as domestic violence. At the center, women receive counseling, health care, and support.
They come into the workshops. They might not have a really great community of friends or a support network, but they're entering this safe and supportive environment which offers that for them.
The women's crafts are sold at the Downtown Women's Center and at one high-end department store in L.A. The handmade items all have labels that say, made by DWC. Kathy Sudo of Bloomingdale's Century City says sales have been so successful that she hopes these items will expand to other stores.
We have been very pleasantly surprised. It is something I'm now working to get the other five Bloomingdale stores in the Los Angeles market to start carrying as part of their assortment.
For Yolanda Waters, she tried her hand at crafts and did not love it. Instead, she discovered a knack for making coffee and other drinks at the cafe. After training here, she was offered a job. Now with a paycheck, she has an apartment and a reason to get up in the morning.
It feels unreal, and because sometimes I think when I wake up that, you know, is it real? Do I have this real job, a real job that I really love?
Waters says she wants homeless women to know there is hope and a place on Skid Row where they are welcomed. Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Los Angeles.
Many little girls like dolls, flowers, butterflies, and ponies. A lot of them also like cars, robots, dinosaurs, and spaceships. But most girls' clothes only feature the flowers, butterflies, and ponies. Two mothers have decided to make clothes that reflect all of the things that little girls are and do and love. VOA's June So has more on the story, narrated by Amy Katz.
6-year-old Bella loves to build houses and cars with Lego blocks.
I like Barbies, also dinosaurs.
So her dress has dinosaurs on it.
I need a train to put on the train track.
Her friend Penny also likes Legos.
I like to make trucks.
The 4-year-old also likes pink and purple, and the dress she's wearing.
She really enjoys wearing it. It's bright and comfortable and unique.
Unique because it has a pattern of the mathematical symbol pi. Penny's mother, Kathy Tramontana, says the design opens the door to a conversation about math.
We haven't found this type of dress in the store.
The pie and dinosaur dresses are from a new girls' clothing line called Princess Awesome. Company co-founder Rebecca Melski says the dresses feature some designs more typically found on boys' clothes.
I think that a girl wearing a dress with science on it, she's telling the world when she's out that this is something she's interested in. She can love girly things and also love science. It tells science is just as much for girls as it is for boys.
It all started 2 years ago when Melski was shopping for her 2-year-old who refused to wear anything but a dress. She bought pajamas mostly from the boys' section because her daughter also liked robots, trucks, and spaceships.
And one day I walked out past through the girls' section of the store and I thought to myself, like, I wish they made one of those cute dresses that also had a robot on it or a dinosaur because she would wear that. She would love that. And then I thought, someone should do that. Maybe I should do that.
Her friend, Eva St. Clair, agreed she should, and their business was born. Melski, a school teacher with 2 children, and St. Clair, a part-time web developer with 4 children, got together on Saturdays. They used fabrics featuring trucks, planes, pirates, and atoms. They also created art dresses based on works by Van Gogh and Monet.
Usually Rebecca and I would be down in my basement. Rebecca would cut and I would stitch. And we got to where we could do about 4 in an hour.
The first batch of 70 dresses sold out at St. Clair's Church Bazaar. So the founders took their business online. The dresses sold very well there, too.
These sold out so fast, I could not make them fast enough. We decided it was time to figure out how to go into a factory.
So they turned to a Kickstarter crowdfunding campaign. They met their goal of $35,000 within days and raised more than $215,000 in total pledges.
Our biggest challenge is going to be how do we expand as rapidly as people seem to want us to.
The founders hope Princess Awesome will expand into products for girls of all ages and all interests. For producer June So, Amy Katz, VOA News, Washington.
Republican Senator Ted Cruz of Texas became the first official candidate for the 2016 U.S. presidential election, announcing in a speech that he'll run for president. Cruz will be part of what is expected to be a large field of Republican White House contenders, in contrast to the Democratic Party, which is focused on the still unannounced candidacy of former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone is in the cafe.
Ted Cruz made his presidential announcement at the nation's largest Christian university, Liberty University, in Lynchburg, Virginia.
I believe in the power of millions of courageous conservatives rising up to reignite the promise of America. And that is why today I am announcing that I'm running for president of the United States.
Cruz said as president he would repeal President Barack Obama's health care law and abolish the Internal Revenue Service, the government's tax-collecting agency. On foreign policy, Cruz told the crowd that as president he would, in his words, stand unapologetically with the nation of Israel, and he vowed to wage an aggressive military campaign against the Islamic State militant group.
Imagine a president who says we will stand up and defeat radical Islamic terrorism. And we will call it by its name.
Cruz was one of 47 Senate Republicans who signed an open letter to Iran's leaders warning that any nuclear deal reached with the Obama administration could be undone by a future president. Cruz was elected to the Senate in 2012 and quickly established himself as a favorite of Tea Party conservatives. Cruz led a 21-hour filibuster on the Senate floor in 2013 to try to defund the health care law known as Obamacare. A few weeks later, he was also a leader of the 16-day partial government shutdown over the health care law that hurt the Republican Party's national image. Cruz hopes his early announcement will give him a boost in public opinion polls, where he lags in a crowded Republican field that is likely to include former Florida Governor Jeb Bush, Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, and fellow Senators Rand Paul of Kentucky, Marco Rubio of Florida, and Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. At this early stage, the Republican race is wide open, says University of Virginia analyst Larry Sabato.
You realize that it's an unformed field. It's obvious from every survey that's been done that the Republican faithful are completely undecided. There is no front runner. The weakness of Jeb Bush in the polls, I think, is notable. He's yet to break 20 in any of the major national polls, and he's well behind in some of the key state polls.
Cruz hopes to appeal first and foremost to Tea Party conservatives and evangelical Christian voters, two key blocks within the Republican Party. Matt Dalek monitors U.S. politics at George Washington University.
And then you go on down the line, and there's Rand Paul and Chris Christie and maybe John Kasich and Ted Cruz. And, you know, obviously you don't know, but these are all interesting and significant figures. And if they're all on stage at a debate together, I'll look forward to watching that debate.
More candidate announcements are expected in the next several weeks, beginning with Senator Rand Paul in early April. Democrats also expect Hillary Clinton to announce her candidacy perhaps as soon as next month. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
With America's national debt continuing to climb, the U.S. Congress is constantly debating ways to save money. The Dollar Coin Alliance, a lobbying group, says billions could be saved if $1 coins were used instead of paper bills. Dollar coins have been around for a long time now, but many people will not use them. The U.S. government tried to push them again in recent years, but then suspended almost all production of dollar coins in 2011. VOA's Deborah Block in Washington takes a look at the effort to revive the dollar coin.
Americans like their paper dollars, but Jim Colby, co-chairman of the Dollar Coin Alliance, thinks switching to the coin is worth it.
The coin does cost more to produce, roughly on the neighborhood of 17 cents versus the 5 or 6 cents that a paper dollar costs to produce. However, the coin lasts 35 years, and it's made of mostly recycled metals. The paper has to be produced out of new materials, and we shred 3 billion of those every year because they wear out.
For years, the former congressman has been pushing legislation that would prop up the dollar coin by phasing out the greenback, as it's called, a move that has met resistance from both politicians and the public. But today, he says, the climate has changed, and a recent poll indicates 61% of Americans like the idea.
When they learn of the savings that can be involved with this, will support the idea of substituting the coin for the paper dollar.
Colby points to a study by the Government Accountability Office, which investigates how the government spends taxpayer dollars. The GAO estimates taxpayers would save more than $4 billion over 30 years, and that figure could be much higher. And that appeals to taxpayer Christy Thompson.
Actually, I'd probably say yes. We need to do it.
But plenty aren't convinced. Kim Doering isn't.
They're louder, they're heavier in your pocket.
And Washington restaurant owner Sue Folati doesn't like the idea of having more dollar coins in her cash register.
If I don't have a choice, then I do, but I will be a very unhappy person.
Adding to the problem is that the gold and silver colored metal coins are about the same size as the 25-cent quarter. Robert Blecker, an economics professor at American University in Washington, says the dollar coins need to be different.
Also, coins can differ in thickness as well as in diameter. And if we could design a dollar coin that's not too big and bulky, probably Americans would like it better.
But that doesn't bother college student Emily Sturgill.
I like them. They're convenient sometimes. They fit in your pocket easily. You don't have to worry about them slipping out like a dollar would if you brought your keys or your phone out.
Both Colby and Blecker agree that widespread usage won't happen easily.
We will never give up the dollar bill until it's abolished, and we have no choice but use the coins.
Blecker thinks the American public would get used to the U.S. dollar coin.
I wouldn't like it at first.
You would get used to it.
But stacks of them are piled in government vaults instead of American pockets. Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
Caring for newborns can be tiring and stressful, especially for first-time mothers. To help those mothers, many U.S. hospitals offer newborn support groups. Faiza El-Masri visited a gathering at Inova Loudoun Hospital in Leesburg, Virginia, and tells us these group meetings give mothers a chance not only to connect, but to share concerns and advice. Faith Lapidus narrates.
He was a very colicky baby, so he was always constantly crying. And being a new mom, I was just like going crazy.
Cynthia Lewis, mother of 6-month-old Oliver, knew she needed support.
My husband was no help, so I just Googled it and I saw this and I came when he was 4 weeks old.
Well, it's so good to see you guys today.
Group facilitator Dana Carmichael opens each meeting by greeting everyone and welcoming new members. These weekly get-togethers at the hospital offer a chance for mothers to talk and feel they're not alone.
Every now and then I'll find a mom who did not have such a group, and they'll talk about how isolating it felt. Maybe they didn't have other friends that had babies. And so they feel isolated. They feel like they're doing it all on themselves. So this really gives them a place to come and meet other women who are going through the same things, you know, having newborn babies, getting answers to questions and to support other moms.
Hi, I'm Christine, and this is Claire, and she will be 8 months next Wednesday, and we just got over a nasty gastro bug.
Mothers bring up all kinds of issues, from breastfeeding, teething, and getting their babies to sleep, to going back to work or changing careers.
We'll go around the group and talk, and for the most part, I'm just trying to make sure conversation keeps flowing. Sometimes there might be a topic we want to talk about. The moms generally are very welcoming to other new moms. You know, they feel comfortable enough to ask questions, you know, personal questions, and they're willing to help one another and answer each other's questions. So it's not me answering their questions for the most part. It's other moms doing it and helping each other.
Olga Riley joined the support group 5 months ago and finds it enjoyable as well as informative.
It's really fun that you can get out of the house and you meet new people who have the same interests, basically, because you find people who don't mind talking about baby stuff.
That's helped her understand and deal with the challenges of being a new mother.
It's not about me anymore. I kind of was used to being a little independent, but now it's more about putting her needs first. We still try to go out and do things, but it's more, revolving about baby schedule.
For Cynthia Lewis, who doesn't have any family members nearby to support her, joining the group helped her relax and enjoy motherhood.
I was not producing enough milk, and I tried everything under the sun to produce more milk, and I just didn't, and I just decided to let go. I will give him what I can get out of myself, and that's it. I just decided to let go. Don't stress about it. That's what I kind of learned from this.
And because it's basically mothers sharing experiences with each other, Lewis sometimes finds that coming to the group is more helpful than visiting the pediatrician.
I feel like a pediatrician just goes by the book. Here, you get real, you know, you talk to moms who've gone through it.
That's what's prompted some mothers to rejoin the group with their second baby, which doesn't surprise Carmichael.
I think every child provides their own concerns, and, you know, not every child is exactly the same. Something will, you know, be different for each one. You think, oh, I've done this once before, it should be fine, and no. Children keep you on your toes.
Carmichael says because this is a non-judgmental, informative zone, mothers keep coming back. When the session's over, they leave more relieved and confident. And that's the whole idea behind the support system. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Good haircut. Good haircut.
The annual South by Southwest gathering in the southern U.S. state of Texas featured more panel discussions, more film screenings, and a lot more music than in the past. Tens of thousands of music fans, film buffs, and high-tech entrepreneurs crowded downtown streets, meeting up, networking, and partying. As VOA's Greg Flakes reports from Austin, the business and the fun have increasingly international flavored.
Unlike the Wolf of Sixth Street, most musicians come here looking for exposure. If they can't get it inside a venue, they'll go out on the street.
There's always music being played here on Sixth Street in Austin with all of its clubs and bars, but during South by Southwest, there's even more of it, and it comes from all over the world.
There are bands here from all over America and from as far away as Japan, South Korea, and Azerbaijan. And thousands of fans pour into Austin to hear them play. Joywave, an indie rock band from Rochester, New York, played at a venue sponsored by Spotify, an online streaming music service favored by young music fans. Bass player John Donnelly and singer Daniel Armbruster are confident that their band will stand out.
There's none like ours. It's also not a competition. I think Spotify, like, all music is instantly accessible forever, so everyone can listen to as much music as they want to.
But many musicians are clearly here hoping for a big break. It's summed up in a song by New York-based comedic songwriter Jessica Delfino. Among the local singer-songwriters who already has a well-established fan base is Eliza Gilkison.
Oh, Eliza, you try so hard, you don't see nothing.
Her new CD, released during the South by Southwest Festival, displays a style of self-expression that's become a model for many younger female singers.
Strip something down to you and a guitar, there's going to be something timeless about that, that is, it's the same through the ages.
Growing up in Los Angeles, Gilkison's first musical impressions came from her songwriting father, Terry Gilkison, who penned many hits and also sang in a folk group.
His music was around me all the time, and he loved, you know, sort of dark melodies, and he really was a master song constructor.
I listen for the whistle, and I lie awake and wait. Wish the railroad didn't run so near.
On her new CD, she included one of his songs.
The clatter of the old fast freight is always ringing music in my ears.
Eliza Gilkison keeps playing concerts and selling CDs with her masterful performance of songs that appeal to both the heart and the intellect. Greg Flakes, VOA News, Austin, Texas.
They want more, they want more, and their hunger will never depart. But wherever I roam, far from you and our home,
is all the time we have for this week's program. Our thanks to executive producer Bob Doty. If you'd like to hear more about these stories, check our website at voanews.com, and we'd love to hear from you. Send us an email from wherever you are to our studios in Washington, D.C. You can email us at americancafe@voanews.com. Why not give us a telephone call? Dial the international code, then the number 1 for the United States, followed by 202-205-9942. When you hear the VOA ID, press 05 and then leave your questions or your comments. For all the folks here at VOA, I'm Ira Melman. We'll see you next time on American Cafe.